This is Digital Story Podcast number 602, September 19th, 2017. Today's theme is iPhone 10 and the rise of computational photography. I'm Derek Story. If I were to place a few of my cameras for 2018 in a line on a table, moving from left to right in terms of technical sophistication, on the far left, a Pentax Super Program SLR. In the middle, maybe an Olympus Pen F mirrorless. And on the right, the iPhone 10. And the iPhone 10 can build an image that is a creation of light and algorithms. The iPhone leverages software to process an image that would be otherwise difficult to capture with traditional cameras. I call this computational photography, and it's the focus of today's show. So before I get to the X's and O's of today's show, which is really all the hardware and software aspects of the new iPhone 10, I wanted just to step back for a second and talk about the evolution of smartphone photography, computational photography, and how I've had to wrestle with it a bit. Because there was a time, to be honest with you, that I was a little bit resentful of what was happening with smartphone photography as it became really good at what it does. And the way that I felt about it was, well, here I spent basically my whole life learning about light, learning how to work cameras, learning how to produce images that either people wanted or needed. And now anyone can pull this device out of their pocket, hold it up, tap a button, and essentially create an image that looks very, very good. And I was thinking, that's not really right, is it? But you know what? It's not really wrong either. It is technology moving forward. And it's funny, as I thought about it, that I seem to embrace technology in other areas just fine, right? In areas that don't affect my craft, in areas that don't affect my job. I'm absolutely fine with it. Let's say in the web publishing world, I mean, the things that I can do now with Nimble Classroom and the podcast and all that kind of stuff, that's wonderful. And I did not have that, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So yeah, I'm fine with it in those other areas, and I should be fine with it in photography. So the way that I'm looking at things now is that smartphone photography and computational photography, and I'll really get into the details of defining what that is here in a few moments. That is a segment of my work, a segment of my hobby, but not the whole thing. It's not going to replace everything. It's not going to make me get rid of all my other stuff and take an iPhone 10 to a commercial job. But it is going to come in handy for a lot of things that I do, and I should leverage it, I should embrace it, and I should learn about it. So I thought, okay, this week, let's just really take a look at what's going on here. I'm going to talk a lot about details and specifications and stuff. I don't really like doing that, but I think those numbers are so impressive for a device that we carry around in our pocket. I think we really do need to look at them and really do need to appreciate what's going on here. And then each of us figure out for ourselves, all right, where, if at all, does this fit into our photography life? Is it a small part of it? Is it a big part of it? Is it all of it? And I think regardless of, you know, where that fits or if at all, I think that's absolutely fine in your choosing, just like any other thing that we choose, from automobiles to where we live to the clothes that we put on. So that is the spirit that I'm presenting all this information for today. Now let's delve into some numbers for a bit and really look at what's going on with the iPhone 10. And wow, it's mind-blowing, it's moving fast, and we should know about it. So here we go. We all know that microchips have been a part of our cameras for a long time. I mentioned earlier the Pentax Super Program 35mm SLR. So it uses a microprocessor to compute exposure. It reads light, it has a program mode, and then it can set the aperture and the shutter speed based on the light reading. That's, you know, pretty good stuff. Now, this was European Camera of the Year in 1983. That was quite a while ago, but it gives us a feel for how long microprocessors and cameras have been working together. So now let's fast forward to, well, let's say with the last couple years. The Pen F takes this exposure capability to new heights, allowing me to, let's say, for example, watch a long exposure develop on its LCD screen, and then provide me an option to end the exposure once the image looks the way that I want. That's pretty incredible stuff. It has in-camera HDR processing, art filters, color adjustments, and a whole lot more. Not bad stuff. Pretty good computer in there doing all of that. Smartphones are really going to a place that is even further up the road. And they are embracing what I call computational photography in a very sophisticated way. And they are using software for real-time image enhancement that goes well beyond exposure. As I look at the iPhone X, there are some remarkable features that will literally change the face of consumer photography. We already know what's going on, and it seems to be accelerating, which feels very natural for the world of technology. So before I get too far down the road here, I dropped the term computational photography on you today. And really, all I'm talking about there is using software algorithms to do more than just process the image, but to make the photo better. That's what smartphones are doing, whether it's the Google Pixel, the iPhone, Samsung, all of them are embracing this. And they have very sophisticated computers inside these devices. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the under-the-hood stuff in the iPhone. Very sophisticated computers, but they also have teams of engineers writing lines and lines and lines of code to leverage not only the microprocessor, but the sensor, the optics, the whole deal. And this is taking our photography into places where they could imagine something and then figure out how to do it. For instance, portrait mode, right? We know about portrait mode. That was something that someone saw, and then they figured out how to write the code and use the hardware in the iPhone 7 to create portrait mode. iPhone 10 continues that trend, and in fact, as I said earlier, accelerates it. That's just crazy stuff. So let's take a closer look at the 10, and the reason why I'm choosing the 10 is because I think in so many ways it embraces where we are right now. And we're going to have the Google Pixel come out, maybe even by the time you listen to the show. And I think it's going to be right there also. You could just substitute your favorite top-of-the-line smartphone for a lot of what I'm going to talk about in this show. So let's start out with image sensors and optics for the iPhone X. It has two new image sensors that are 12 megapixels each. Both camera modules are equipped with an optical image stabilizer inside the camera. That's just terrific stuff. Now, the wide-angle lens gives us 28 millimeters and an aperture of f1.8. And the telephoto lens is 56 millimeters at f2.4. We also have a quad LED flash. And the sensor is reportedly bigger and can capture 83% more light. So, wow, that's quite a bit more. Now, according to Android Pit, where I got some of this information, I've got a couple different sources that I'm using for today's show. Android Pit right here says, assuming a crop factor of 7 and a 1 over 2.9 inch sensor size in the iPhone 7, this would approximately mean a 1 over 2.0-inch format, which would be bigger than in other current smartphones. So, a bigger sensor, we seem to get excited about that in regular cameras, and probably should get excited about it in our smartphones also. And the point here being that the hardware that these devices are using is pretty good stuff. And these are crammed into something that, you know, fits in our pocket. Now let's talk about the new algorithms. So as with previous iPhone generations, there is a portrait mode in the new iPhones. And you know what that does is it blurs the background. It gives us the effect of having a wide aperture for a portrait and a soft background. But there is something new, and a whole new set of code, right, for this, which is the portrait lighting function. I'm going to talk more about it in detail, but essentially it works by detecting the face of the photographed person, and then it's simulating several different types of lighting, and we can choose the lighting that we want. So in order to process all of this information, Apple has equipped its new A11 processor with a standalone image signal processor. And this also will help with focusing and noise reduction. So a lot of hardware to go with the software. You know, in the first point, I talked about sensor and having a bigger sensor, great optics and all that. But this A11 processor, along with the new image signal processor, very important part. This allows the software engineers to leverage this hardware with the code that they're writing to do these pretty impressive things. Video. Apple divides the capture image into a total of 2 million squares and analyzes their content. 2 million squares and analyzes their content. This compresses low-detail image areas more heavily, while the areas are rich with detail are preserved as much as possible. You know, this isn't terribly new. Video encoders, you know, work this way. But Apple wants to be exceptionally good at it. And so it's using the new HEVC for its video codec. And it says that, quite confidently, that it has the best video quality of any smartphone. And just to add some numbers to this, 60 frames per second at maximum resolution, which is 4K. So you can shoot 4K at 60 frames per second. There are slow motion videos at 1080p and 240 images per second, which equals a slowdown by a factor of 8 when played back at 30 frames per second. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you right now, but this is just crazy stuff. And according to Android Pit, the Samsung Galaxy Note 8 currently achieves only 1280 by 720 pixels at 240 frames per second. Video is crazy with this, including shooting 4K at 60 frames per second. If you just think about that, if you just think about the processing power required to do that, it's pretty incredible. All right, let's talk about the front-facing camera. This is the one that we do our selfies with. So it sports a 7-megapixel front camera. This is the iPhone X with a 3D scanner for the new Face ID feature, and it allowing for portrait mode, including the bokeh effect for portrait lighting, and all of this works with selfies, right? So suddenly selfies are on steroids here. I mean, we can do all these crazy effects for our selfies with the front-facing camera. As you look at the camera, so hidden inside that small notch cutout, the top of iPhone X, there's all sorts of new parts in there. And they're there for all sorts of reasons. You know, they're not just to, you know, change your face into a cat emoji. You now have an infrared camera there. You have a flood illuminator. You have a proximity scanner. You have an ambient light sensor, speaker, 7-megapixel camera, and dot projector. And all this comes together in what Apple has dubbed as the True Depth camera. So it's used for Animoji, Face ID, and then all sorts of camera tricks. And that bit of information, by the way, came from The Verge. So thank you, Verge, for that. Everything that I just talked about for the last minute is all with the camera that used to be just the FaceTime camera that, you know, that we would use only when we had to. And now it has all of this capability. Let's take a look at portrait lighting mode. What Apple says is that it can bring dramatic studio lighting effects to the iPhone. And this is done with software, but of course working with this very powerful hardware that I've been talking about. So this is the way that Apple described it in a press release. This is for portrait lighting mode. It uses the dual cameras and the Apple-designed image signal processor to recognize the scene, create a depth mat, and separate the subject from the background. Machine learning is then used to create facial landmarks and add lighting over contours of the face, all of this happening in real time. So what Apple's doing is combining techniques used in augmented reality and facial recognition to create a photo that, well, no regular camera could take, right? And on top of all this, Apple says that the new iPhones even have a dedicated chip for machine learning tasks, which a lot of this plays into. We haven't even talked about the screen. So let me do one more little technical thing, and then I'm going to talk non-technical for a minute. So for the iPhone X, then there's an OLED screen. Edge-to-edge displays Apple's proprietary advantages, such as the coloration and brightness adjusting True Tone display technology, and a new Super Retina that means that the iPhone X sports 2,436 by 1,125 resolution at 458 pixels per inch across 5.8 inches of real estate. Now, what people have said who have seen this in person is that it is the most gorgeous screen they have ever seen. And just think about this, 458 ppi across 5.8 inches on an OLED screen with all this horsepower behind it. The reason why I bring this up is that the act of taking the picture and then reviewing the image after you've captured it, after it's been processed in real time using all this tech that I've talked about, that experience also is very satisfying. We used to have this thing back when I worked at O'Reilly called iRule. And the thinking behind iRule was this, that what you wanted people to do when you're trying to teach them something, whether it's through a book or at a conference or however you were trying to teach, is that you wanted them to have success early and often. And when they learn something new, when someone learns something new, and then they get that positive feedback, it works, then they suddenly have this feeling like, iRule. Imagine how iRule fits into what we're talking about right here. There it is. It's sitting in your pocket. You pull it out. You do a snapshot. All of this stuff that we have talked about happens, right? Starting with the optics, the stabilization, the sensor, the horsepower, and then the software all combined to create an image that is probably pretty darn good 95% of the time. And then not only is that image itself pretty darn good, you get to look at it right away on an OLED screen that has this crazy resolution and this color processing. And so suddenly you go, wow, I rule. I take great photos. Isn't this shot great? And then suddenly you're just shooting in all sorts of situations that we would have a hard time shooting with prior technology, with older technology. So the light's really low, no problem. You just start snapping away and the images look good. And you go, wow, low light's not a problem. Why did I ever worry about it before? Probably handles backlight pretty well. Suddenly your portraits look really good. The face looks good and then the background softened. So then what you're really down to, if you have any compositional sense at all, your shots are going to look really great with these devices. Now, this is the part where, as a photographer, I could go, you know, that sucks, right? Because essentially what you're doing is undermining my craft, right? Now, suddenly, anyone that can afford an iPhone probably could take pictures with enough resolution and that are colorful and sharp and you know, just look great to satisfy almost any online situation. But that's not how I'm looking at it. The way that I'm looking at it is, and I think in part I have to look at it this way in order not to go crazy, is remember at the top of the show when I lined up my cameras from left to right. So on the left side, I had 35 millimeter SLR, which I use. In the middle, I had a mirrorless camera, which I use and love. And then on the right, I had an iPhone. I had a smartphone, which I also use. So the way that I am looking at it is that it is choosing the right tool for what I need to do. as good as the iPhone 10 will be, and it looks like it's going to be very good, I, as a photographer, could not use that as my only camera. Because there are just certain things that I need. I need different focal lengths. There's all sorts of stuff. I mean, we're all photographers here. I don't have to tell you all the stuff that I need. And you understand that the iPhone is not going to meet all of those needs. However, for a portion of my photography, it will meet those needs. And so for that type of photography, in a sense, I would be foolish not to use it. And whether it's the iPhone 10 or the Google Pixel, Samsung Note, whatever, I would be foolish not to use it. I would be cutting off my nose to spite my face, right? Because, let's say, family vacation is a favorite example that I like to use for my photography as a hobbyist. Family vacations suddenly are a lot easier. Because, you know, one of the things that family hates, right, is when you go all photographer on them. You know, you want to do just a shot of the family, and you're taking 2 minutes to line up the shot, get the right lens on there, you know, do all that sort of stuff. That all goes away with a sophisticated smartphone. You basically pull the device out of your pocket, you compose the shot, it takes care of everything else, everyone's happy. You have a good shot, it happened quickly, move on. And in that case, I actually think that having a really good smartphone is a great thing, is a wonderful thing, and is a plus for photographers and consumers alike. And so now, what is the percentage of where I use the iPhone versus the mirrorless versus the film camera? I think that's a sliding scale, and I think that is going to continue to change over time. My point is that this wonderful new iPhone is not going to null my other cameras, is not going to keep me from buying other cameras in the future. However, as I've talked about before, it does take the place of a camera purchase. So instead of buying, let's say, a new DSLR or a new Pro lens in the budget, I'm buying the iPhone 10. So it does take the place of a purchase, but it doesn't replace all the cameras itself because the other cameras have their place and have their needs also. I just got a note right before I started recording this show that contained the shot list for a commercial shoot that I'm doing on Wednesday. They are not paying me the money they pay me to show up with an iPhone, nor could I do the shoot with an iPhone, at least... at least not more than once, right? So that's a situation where obviously I need my other cameras and I need all my bag of tricks to pull it off. So there are all sorts of situations. However, what the iPhone does do, what the Google Pixel does do, it does replace a major purchase in your budget. And that, in part, is what camera manufacturers, the other camera manufacturers, are feeling even from our segment. Even from the enthusiast and professional segment, they're not losing our business altogether, but they have lost one purchase every 2 years. And, you know, that adds up, right? You start multiplying out, and that is a hit on the market. So I think computational photography, as represented by the latest generation of smartphones, is having its impact on the overall world of photography, and especially in the world of hobbyist photography. But it's going to affect other areas also. And how widespread that impact is, well, that's going to depend on what people need to do with their image capture devices. And it's also going to depend on what keeps happening with future generations of these smart devices. One of my favorite sayings is, let go or be dragged. And in this case, I'm going to let go of worrying about computational photography. I'm not going to be dragged. And I'm going to embrace it and see what I can do with those new devices. I'll let you know how it goes, but I'll tell you, this is really a crazy and fast-changing time that we're working in right now. Caskable Transfer with Photos for Mac OS. This is a really cool app. This is a $15 app. And I just want to tell you a situation where apps like this come in so handy. In fact, I don't know if there's another app like this. Because what it enables you to do is use your Wi-Fi enabled camera in my case, it was the OMD EM10 Mark II, to send images to my Mac instead of my iOS device. So here's the scenario. I was at the Metreon last week, and it was twilight, and I was able to go out on that patio. I don't know if you've ever been to the Metreon in San Francisco, but they have this patio that they deny access to 99% of the time. The event that I was at, a tech event, allowed us to go out on the patio during the event. And so I was there at twilight, and there I have this beautiful San Francisco skyline. I have Yerba Buena Gardens below me, the whole deal. And so I had an opportunity to take some pictures. So I pulled out the EM10 Mark II and shot some lovely shots, RAW plus JPEG. And in my bag, because I was traveling that day and traveling light, I had my MacBook Air 11-inch. So the 11-inch doesn't have an SD card reader. I love that computer, but that's the one thing it doesn't have. And I had left the SD card reader on the table back at the studio when I was rushing out the door. So I wanted to transfer just a couple of those shots to my Mac so that I could work on them. I didn't want to work on them on an iOS device. I actually wanted to work on them in Photos and use my editing extensions, use my sharpening, my definition, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, do some real work on them, really make them look nice. So this is what Caskable Transfer can do for us. All you do, and this is very simple how you use it. First of all, you have to have the app on your computer. Then you turn on the Wi-Fi on your camera. Once it's transmitting, then you log on to that network with your computer. So you just, you know, change your Wi-Fi network so that you're using the camera. And then you launch Caskable Transfer. And it will see all the images on the card of your camera. You can pick and choose the ones that you want. And the thing that I like about it is that it's not just JPEGs. It could be JPEGs, it could be RAWs, or you can send over JPEG RAW pairs. And you have that choice. You have that choice all the time, which is really fantastic. And then not only does it just send it to some folder on your desktop, which it can do, but in this case, I can send it directly into Photos. And you can also send it directly into Lightroom, which I'm going to talk about next week. What I did was I picked five of the shots that I thought were pretty good, and I sent them into Photos. It takes about a minute per RAW plus JPEG pair to come in to the Mac. And then when it was done, turned off the camera, opened up Photos, started working on the images. No cables required, no SD card reader. I could just send it directly from my camera via Wi-Fi to my Mac. This is a $15 app. Now, it works with all the same cameras that Caskable 3.0 works with. So that includes Canon, Nikon, Fuji, Olympus, Sony, and Panasonic. You can transfer RAW, JPEG, or RAW plus JPEG. And you have a couple different ways you can send them over. You really have a lot of control over this process. So what I did was I just left the tile on all the pages of the digital story, because I had a feeling that I was going to get to talk about this. On that, if you click the same tile that was there before, you'll notice that when you go to our landing page at Caskable, that they have Caskable 3, but they also have transfer right there. And you can click on that. You can download a trial copy, but you can also see all the cameras that are supported, and you can see all the things that it does, all the features that it has for each camera. They show you for each camera. Now, all of my Olympus cameras, it does everything. I think this is really nice. So that's not a problem at all. The way that I look at it is that it's a terrific safety net to have. Just have it on your computer. If something goes wrong with your SD card reader, if you lose your cable, if the way that you normally transfer your images from your camera to your computer fails, then you always have this in your back pocket. Pick the shots that you want, send them over via Wi-Fi, keep working. Really a wonderful thing. Caskable Transfer, as I said, there's a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Go take a look at it. I think it's very cool, and I think you're going to want to have it on your Mac. All right, I have a few updates, and I'm going to start out with the backbone of our support, our Patreon members, and thanks to all of them. Members of our inner circle are the folks that I depend on to make sure that all the bills get paid every month for this podcast. If you're interested in becoming a member of our inner circle, a Patreon member, just click on the tile that's on any of the pages of The Digital Story. Super easy. And believe me, the impact, the positive impact, is tremendous. Our next Nimble Classroom is on Saturday, September 23rd, and it's going to be focusing on Luminar. And so we're going to do Luminar Pro Techniques. And then we still have a couple openings in the November Photos 3 class, although that one is starting to fill up. The first Photos class sold out, second one starting to fill up, and that's where I show you all the cool stuff in Photos 3 and show you how to incorporate it into your workflow. And that includes editing extensions, that includes iPhone photography, that includes iCloud, all of the good stuff. So all you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, click on Classroom up in the top nav bar, and you'll see what's going on. This first season is really shaping up great, and I'm really excited about what I'm going to be doing in the first part of next year. And then finally, I want to thank our friends at Red River Paper, our longest running sponsor, the folks that have stood by us the whole time, that make great paper. They have a wonderful site, not only with a wide variety of paper, but also ink, envelopes, glassine sleeves, tutorials, reviews, you name it. If it's time to get back into printing, click on the Red River Paper tile, go to our landing page, and just take a look at what's available. You know, let your mind think about the possibilities and then get something that you can hold in your hands, put it on the wall, and share with a friend, especially as we start to come into this time of year, the holiday time of year, where you might want to start thinking about fine art cards. You might want to start thinking about prints for friends and family. Go to Red River Paper. Get your supplies now so that when the inspiration strikes, you can start making that content right away. And believe me, people will be thrilled. They'll be very flattered that they're receiving a personalized work of art from the artist, him or herself. Red River Paper, and they also have a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/Red River Paper. So that's going to do it for me this week. This whole notion of computational photography, it is both exhilarating and a little daunting all at once, but the path that I'm choosing to take is to embrace it for the parts of my photography where it can really help me. The other parts, hey, I'm going to keep doing what I love to do. I love my cameras. I love my film cameras. I love my mirrorless cameras. I love my DSLR. It's just going to be one big happy family. The iPhone looks like it's going to be a member of that family. All right, until next week, and when we have new topics and new things to talk about, have a great week. I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.